And welcome everybody to the Tommy and Stu podcast. Thanks for listening. Episode 1, the pilot. Just giving this thing a try. Two guys from the Northeast. I'm from New York. Stu is from Philly. We're just trying this thing out. We have a bunch of interesting things to talk about in the world of sports, the world of life, liquor, food, whatever. Just trying to have some fun with this thing, and hopefully you guys will too. Stu, say hi to the people.
Hello, people. Welcome to our pilot podcast. I think this is going to evolve and be very enjoyable as we, as Tommy mentioned, run the gamut from sports to pop culture to movies to just stuff that the normal people like to talk about. But I think we have some educated opinions. I think we're not going to be X's and O's kinds of guys, as we're not inside the locker rooms, and we're not going to be diagramming plays. There's plenty of podcasts and 16 different ESPN channels where you can get that information, but we're going to try to delve a little deeper and touch on the deeper side of sports and pop culture and hopefully add a little humor to your day.
Yeah, like Stu says, we're really just a couple of assholes from the Northeast. We we love sports, you know. We love kind of talking about sports. And honestly, buddy, we don't get to talk as much as we used to. So I'm going to treat this as, you know, a way that we can kind of catch up as well with each other, because honestly, it's been a while, you know.
Yeah, Tommy and I, just to give you guys a quick background before we really jump into it, Tommy and I met, about 8 years ago now, 7 years ago now, in New York City. He's been running bars forever. I was new to the game, and started working for him across New York with a bunch of different bars, and the friendship developed from there. He's now in Orlando. I'm still in New York. He's still in the bar business. I've kind of gravitated to the fitness industry, but like you said, we don't get to catch up as often. But one common thread that we've always had, and you know, probably why we started to get along so well, is our love for sports.
And the fact that we get together twice a year and eat frozen yogurt and watch Steel Magnolias together.
I wasn't going to let them in on that, but now the secret's out.
Now they know.
We like probably a lot of you listening to this, just got done watching the game of the night, Warriors v. Thunder, and I honestly can't believe what I just saw. I never thought I'd be sitting here thinking the Warriors would be down 3-1 and dominated as they have been by OKC, but they're in fucking trouble, Tommy.
Yeah, they're in trouble. You know, this is, being a tortured New York Knicks fan, when the Knicks are hot, I mean, I'm just gonna throw it out there. I'm a little bit of a bandwagon guy with the Knicks. To be honest with you, when they're on and when they're hot, I could tell you their freaking whole bench. But when they're the way they are right now, it's tough for me to even get excited at all about basketball. This year being a definite exception. I've gotten into it, and I've kind of been into it. I mean, I still probably can't deliver. You know, like you said, the X's and O's stuff, and you know, all the players, you know, all the way down the line. But yeah, it's interesting. And you know what's interesting, Stu? I was thinking about this as we kind of search for topics and think of things we're gonna cover. I am so rooting for the Thunder to kick their ass, and I think it speaks to kind of who you are. I know all throughout whatever, you've always rooted for greatness. Is that fair to say? Like, when someone's hot and when someone's like really good, they're at the top of.
Are you saying I'm a fair weather fan? Like, I root for Duke and I root for Steph Curry.
No. Well, actually, I'm actually respecting it. I'm actually saying, like, when somebody is proving to be at the top of their game, whether it's acting, whether it's baseball, whether it's pitching or whatever it is, if someone is at the top of the game, you kind of latch onto that and you kind of give it, like, and it kind of, I guess, speaks to who you are versus who I am. You respect it and you show it, you give it the respect it deserves, and you like it and you want to continue to celebrate how great it is, where I just really want to see the ladder kicked out from underneath him, to be honest with you.
That does describe our personalities to a T, I think. I'm certainly not the biggest basketball fan in the world. I watch it, but I don't, you know, during the regular season, I'm not the guy that sits around and watches full games every night. But I kind of catch up in the playoffs, and the Warriors this year made me a fan during the regular season just from how fun they were to watch. And Steph Curry, now if you listen to every analyst across every network. Like, it's not even a dispute anymore that he's the best shooter that's ever lived, which is crazy. And I just got sucked into it. I can't stop watching this guy shoot. And that's why it boggles my mind how OKC has shut him down the last two games. Now, given he's injured, he's playing with a bad knee, bad ankle, a bad elbow now.
Really though.
But that's not enough. But even 85% Steph should be playing a lot better than this. And just watching the game tonight, he's just getting mauled as he runs through the lane. They got six guys on him. He can't get off a shot, and he just looks frustrated. And it's sad for me to watch, because I kind of wanted to see, and it's not over yet, but I wanted to see a Cleveland Cavaliers Warriors rematch. Cleveland at full strength, Warriors at full strength, so there's no excuses this year. I wanted to see LeBron, who thinks he's the league MVP every year and threw a little shade on Steph being the unanimous MVP last week. I wanted to see them go toe-to-toe, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen right now, but you never know.
It may not go toe-to-toe on both ends. How much of a nightmare for the NBA is that? A Toronto OKC finals.
Yeah, that's a freaking nightmare. And if you heard, it's so funny, the Cleveland Cavaliers, like, two games ago, they were unstoppable. You thought they might go undefeated until the finals. And now they've lost two in a row, and it's the same team that you started watching last year, where they're imploding, and all of a sudden Kevin Love's kind of injured and he can't hit a shot. Kyrie stinks. And LeBron is passive aggressive in press conferences after the game, talking about I and himself. And when asked about how the team played, LeBron responded last night, "Well, I think I was able to get my game plan going the way I wanted it to. I was able to do this. I was able to do that." And he was definitely taking little jabs at the fact that his second and third in command were complete ineffective retards on the court last night, and he takes little jabs, and that's what I can't stand about him.
No, totally. He's still a head case, to be honest with you. He hasn't gotten to that point where I think even Kobe was. Going back to the Warriors, though. So with Steph, and I'm with you, and I get it, and you can't. It's hard not to get caught up. I'll be honest with you. I hated Steph Curry in the beginning of his career for one reason and one reason only. Yes, because he was good, and because I don't know why I saw a shorter version of Reggie Miller in him, and that drove me nuts. And Reggie Miller, if you're a Knicks fan, is the ultimate villain. I mean, period. He was better. He was Hall of Fame against the Knicks. He was a good player through his career, and a Hall of Famer against the Knicks. So, but then what happened was I got over it. You know what I mean? This guy's great. I started to, you know, I guess through my eyes, start seeing him as his own player. Like you just said, he is the undisputed greatest shooter of all time. You can't knock that. And then the whole, you know, his daughter, the whole Riley thing, how cute she is. That was awesome. I got into that a little. That was funny. And you know what? How do you really hate the guy? You know, our buddy Nick, he hates the mouthpiece. And I could see that. It doesn't irk me as much as it irks Nick, but
you're grasping at straws when you hate the guy because he chews on a mouth guard.
But also the freaking, you know, the shimmy dance he does and stuff like that. You know, but I guess that's going to take us into something else in a minute or two. But I don't hate the guy, but I am rooting. I consistently root for the underdog,
which is probably more normal. You know, it's easier to root for the team that wins 73 games and sets the all-time record and hasn't lost two games in a row all season until just now in the playoffs. I just for the sheer spectacle of it, and any team that can just, you know, any guy, him or Clay, on any given night can just rattle off 6 3-point shots in a row when you know it's coming and you can't defend it. Like, he's a human vine video, and you know, just. You know, in practice, he hit 77 three-pointers in a row this year. You know, the other night before the game, there's a Vine out on Facebook of him hitting 5 shots in a row from half court. It's just that stuff doesn't happen, and it's kind of like a car accident. It's just like you can't take your eyes off of it.
It's the age-old thing, though. You know what I mean? Like, up until Steph, winning by pure threes and just dropping bombs was never really an option because – eventually you're going to get cold. Now, lo and behold, we get a guy comes across. He's not getting cold. You know what I mean? And if he is getting cold, you know, somebody else is hot. So it's like, you know, now you're looking at, is he finally getting cold? Is he finally getting cold? But yeah, as far as the beating him up and stuff like that down the lane, that's the only way you can play him. You have to do that.
Yeah, and he's 6'3". He's not a big, strong guy. So if you start manhandling him and he's not finding the hole and he's not seeing balls go in, he's going to get frustrated. And that team kind of takes its cues from Steph. Now, you know, obviously they got Clay and they got Draymond. But if Steph's not hot and he's bricking up shots all game, it's tough. It's, you know, your star players, as I think Barkley said before the game tonight, your role players take their cues from your stars. And if your stars aren't finding the bottom of the bucket, you know it's going to be a long night. So we'll see if they can. I think they're going to win Game 5 in Golden State. I don't see them losing at home and going out like that. But it's going to be a tough road to win 3 in a row against OKC the way they're playing right now.
But that stuff doesn't bother you at all, the shimmying and the dancing and the smile and the, you know.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because it's weird, right, that what he does, and I'm gonna put Draymond in a separate category. Let's just go Curry right now versus, say, someone like Cam in the NFL, who was absolutely demolished this year for his dab and his celebrations after every first down, after every touchdown. And I'm going to tell you what I perceive as the difference. Curry is definitely cocky, but subtly cocky. He'll shoot and then just turn and start running down the floor before the ball even goes in the basket, because he knows it's in. You know, he's got that little shimmy every once in a while, but it's kind of subtle. You know, if you're not really watching him, it lasts a second and it's over. Whereas a guy like Cam kind of really makes it about himself. You know, after a first down, he's walking 10 yards further down the field and putting his arms straight out. After a touchdown, he's got a 10-minute choreographed celebration that's all about him and calling attention to himself. Whereas Steph, he might shoot, he might look at the guy who was in his face for a split second, and it picks it up on TV, but the fans in the arena don't really know what's going on. And that stuff is part of the game. These guys all talk shit to each other when they're standing in line at the, you know, waiting for a foul shot. They're all talking to each other when they're guarding each other. You know, whether it was back in Jordan's day or whether it's now, these guys are all talking to each other at all times. They're talking to each other in the NFL, at the line of scrimmage, in pileups. So, like, the little subtle taunting and little subtle celebrating, that doesn't bother me. But when you make it a giant show and it's more about, look at me, and then you take it to the press conference after the game and you're not humble like Cam wasn't, or you don't know how to lose. You know, Curry, for all his taunting, he's nothing but humble. He's always giving credit to the other team. He knows how to handle himself. But Cam, after what he did in the Super Bowl, on top of his celebrations, to me, it's unlikable.
You know what else it is? it's also, you're dealing with two separate people. So I'm thinking, like, the celebrations, they kind of stand on their own. But if you're going to just compare and contrast the two different levels of celebrations, I think you're right. I don't think there's a whole lot of difference to the level of celebrations, because, well, you know, when Curry does that backwards roll, that backwards run, and he doesn't even care where he's going, he does the shoulder shimmy, tongue out, mouthpiece out, the smile, the dance, you know. Me being an old school guy, that's hard to watch for me. But in general, isolate the celebrations and then isolate the personalities. Off the court, in the locker room, at the press conferences, Steph Curry's a hard guy to hate, you know? He's a stand-up guy. You never hear him placing blame. He's kind of humble. You could tell he's a family guy, a team guy.
Mom's hot.
Whereas I think, Newton is still a little bit of a head case. He doesn't know who he is, where he is. One day he wants all the attention in the world. The next day he's walking out of press conferences. He's very combative too, making controversial statements in the news, all that stuff. I think that gauges it gives the public a different perception of, you know, where that celebration is coming from. So what I'm saying is that they may be, even if they were celebrating exactly the same, we already think Steph is a good guy. most of us, I mean, a lot of people think Cam's an asshole, and I still think he's an asshole. Not an asshole. Maybe an asshole is the wrong word. Maybe just very, very immature. And I think a lot of these guys, and I think that's what you got with LeBron too, who comes out and says stupid stuff. I think they start maturing. I think Kobe did it for a while and until he started stringing those championships together. Now you've accomplished something. Now you've been somewhere, and now you just have a different way about you. Remember a couple of years ago when they were trying to win their first one, where they were dressed like nerds after every press conference? That just shows that you haven't been anywhere yet. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, and to show you the difference between Steph and Cam, Cam shows up for the Super Bowl with MVP, personalized MVP cleats, where it had MVP on his cleats by Under Armour, and all of his stats for the year, like emblazoned on his cleats.
Yeah, that's a joke.
It's a joke. You don't see Steph doing that. You don't see guys like Tom. You know, Tom Brady walks into a press conference, and if they lose, it's all on him. It's what he did badly. He takes it on the chin. Cam puts a hood over his face and walks out of the press conference.
Yeah, and blames people.
And blames people.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of your boy Tom. He's back. He's back, huh? He's not going away, huh? This story is not going to go away, is it?
It's the story that will never end. I mean.
At what point does he being, you know, I guess kind of just believing in himself and executing his own integrity to where it's being dragged out so long to where it's bad for the game? Where do you draw that line?
It's funny because I've gone through I've come full circle with this. When this thing first broke, I was so sure that he cheated. I wanted him jailed. you know, I thought it was so obvious with the text messages where McNally's calling Yastrzemski or vice versa. I forget which way it went. The deflator, and you have video evidence of the locker room guy taking a bag of balls into the bathroom before the game. I mean, it was so blatant, forgetting all the other evidence and the fact that the pressure, you know, that the pressure readings may not have been right. They may not have been using the same gauges. Weather can affect air pressure. All that crap aside, there was a text message that said deflator, and you had guys taking balls into the locker room. I was like, this is sort of like the OJ case. And I was like, forget all the other evidence and all the other stuff. When told that his wife was murdered, not only does he not ask how, but he gets in a Bronco and starts fleeing. What more do you need to know? So I went from Brady is 100% guilty to now I'm just so annoyed by Goodell and the NFL just needing to win and trying to save face for all their botched cases with Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson and all the stuff they fucked up in the last year. They just need to win so bad. And we'll get into this too with their latest thing with the National Institute of Health and the CTE stuff that they've been interfering with. Like, they need to win so bad that now I almost want Brady to win. And I know you being the ultimate Boston hater, you probably don't, but I'm just so tired of this now. And four games for deflated balls when he went out in the second half and played better. When if you put Stick'Em on your gloves, you're just fined $25,000. It's the same shit to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did the wrong thing. I think he deflated balls. I think it was a cheating situation. Yes, exactly. I agree. Like if you're, you know, but I do think it's the equivalent of, you know,
is it different than the Stick'Em thing? Is it different?
Yeah. Doing 70 and a 65. But was the Stick'Em illegal?
I think it is illegal. I think Stick'Em is it is illegal. Just like putting like Crisco or whatever they linemen put on their jersey, so the hands slip off.
Yeah, I guess it's comparable. My whole thing is it's a very simple opinion. Honestly, I think both these guys are assholes, and I think what they should have done was gotten together, agreed on two games, and moved the fuck on. That's it.
Yep. I think at this point Brady wouldn't even agree to that. Now it's about his legacy. Yeah. Now it's about
– they both dug in. They both dug in deeper. So I can't blame one and not the other. If one of them's going to – in this particular case, I can't blame one and not blame the other. You know what? They both should have got together. And, you know, the thing about Brady now is that if he's going to really fight this, he's going to have to – you know, there's going to be digging. You know what I mean? They're going to – if he wants to do this, they're going to expose, you know, he's going to have to make depositions. He's going to have to volunteer information, cell phones and stuff like that. That I don't know how.
I don't think he has any more cell phones. I think he destroyed them all.
Yeah, he just destroys them all. Right. That makes sense. I mean, whatever. But I mean, I just really, really think the bottom line is these two guys should have gotten together. What does the NFL need? Another freaking scandal? Goodell is really trying to fight this to the end. Just agree on two games and that's it. Just put it to bed. Put it to bed.
Yeah, I'm tired of it. But Brady's got the – he's got Ted Olson representing him. You know who Ted Olson is?
Yeah.
He's the guy that was involved in the Bush v. Gore election, one of the best attorneys in the country, who was former what was he, the Solicitor General? He was the guy that – argues on behalf of the United States in cases in front of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So he's the real deal. So Brady's not playing. I guess I don't know if he's spending his own money or if he's spending the union's money now. He certainly there's certainly plenty of it to go around, whichever it is. But I don't see him sitting down at this point and accepting a two-game suspension.
Yeah, that guy's got a 75% win rate on appeals or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's good. So if he's got – I mean, if Brady's got a chance, he's got it with Ted Olson. So we'll see what he can do. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Speaking of the NFL, I know we wanted to kind of cover that a little bit and just about how, you know, it's becoming the freaking Roman Empire of sports. And I know you have some strong feelings on, I guess, you know, you've thrown terms around like bullying and – you know, basically, you know, stuff that you know, in that regard, where the mafia, mob mentality.
Yeah.
And it is getting old with them, isn't it?
I mean, it's this latest story that's been on all the channels this week about the National Institute of Health is just appalling to me. But I guess I shouldn't be surprised at this point. But I guess as a quick synopsis, the NFL promised $30 million of grant money to the National Institute of Health, you know, for their research on CTE. And that money was supposed to go with no conditions. The National Institute of Health being the leading researcher, looking into what causes CTE, had the ability or was supposed to have the ability to choose who did the research. And when they choose this guy named Stern, I guess the NFL didn't like it because the guy's had some negative opinions about the NFL in the past. And they pulled the funding. You know, we're not letting this guy do it. We want our guy to do it. And basically try to intimidate and influence the results of this study and pull the money. And when the National Institute of Health said, well, if you pull this money, the taxpayers are going to be on the hook for the $16 million, the NFL didn't care. So they were happy to let the taxpayers pay. I think they offered them like $2 million instead.
Yep.
And the NIH denied it. But it's just ridiculous. The lengths that the NFL will go to kind of skew public perception to how they want it. And at the end of the day, the crazy thing is it doesn't even matter, because no matter how sick you are of the NFL and how much you know they're bullies, you're going to tune in on Sunday and watch.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you in that regard for I guess the most part, but – you know, here's one thing I think. Yes, they are how they handled that situation was terrible. And they've just become, under this guy, Goodell, just unbelievably, you know, cocky entity. And they basically just, you know, they you know, that's what happens, I guess. You know, when you can get away with stuff. Bill Clinton said why he allowed Monica Lewinsky to blow him. They asked him why he did it. He said, because I could do it. And he's like, you know what? I don't mean to sound cocky, but I'm just being honest. I did it because I could. And that's the level the NFL is starting to operate on, where they think they could just throw their weight around and just do whatever they want. Now, here's what I think about. I don't agree with the way they operate. But at the same time, I guess I feel I have certain feelings on the whole thing in general. Like, if you ram your head at full speed with other finely tuned athletes, I think, you know, if I don't need a study to tell me that that's probably not good for you. You know what I mean?
Well, I agree with you 100%. I'm not blaming the NFL for CTE.
They are basically when you look at it, our modern day gladiators. You know what I mean? In the Colosseum, that's basically what they are. And yep. You know what? A lot of them come out just fine. Most of them come out just fine. I don't know. I shouldn't say that because I'm not a fully educated. Now we're talking about the head specifically. So I would say yes, most of them come out okay because, you know, you see them all. They're very intelligent, articulate, on-air people. And, you know, you if it seems like the ones who have been, permanently damaged to a high degree are few and far between. And what's the payoff? The payoff is the accolades every Sunday, the drug of just running out onto that field with 80,000 people screaming your name, and the pension, and, you know, just the glory that you have. And I think there is an assumed risk when you do that. I don't think that I got to watch Will Smith in movies to tell me that, look, this guy rammed his head into this guy. Guy gets in the equivalent of 30 car wrecks every Sunday.
Yep.
And now you got to know it's only going to get worse. What do you think? Now these guys, I mean, the head's not building more muscle, right? But the body is getting stronger. Evolution is taking place. You know, I don't know. You know, look at the linemen were 190 pounds in the 1920s, and then, you know, when I was watching in my heyday, you know, anybody over 260 was a moose, and now you got to be like over 300 to be even able to, you know, or late twos, early threes to even be able to make the team as an offensive lineman. And these guys, they're running 5.52s and 5.1s. And then you got some of these running backs that are just, I mean, these guys are freaks. You're getting guys who are 255 pounds, shredded, running, you know, 4.5s. What do you think is going to happen? Like I said, the head is not building the muscle to account for the impact that these newer supersized bodies are able to create. So you have to know what's going on. And I think you gotta deal with it. Now I want to touch on the NFL. I don't think the NFL is as invincible as a lot of people think it is. Troy Aikman made the prediction maybe about 10 years ago that the experience of going to an NFL game is pretty much, even 10 years ago, not even touchable as compared to being able to watch it from home. And, you know, that he predicted was eventually going to hurt the game tremendously because eventually you're not going to, you know, be able to sell tickets. Now throw in fantasy football's popularity and where that's going and, you know, the man cave, the evolution of the television. You want to be in your house, you want to have access to all your sports and your computers to know how you're doing on these big money fantasy leagues. Now, what are you throwing into the mix? Stu, when I was growing up, if you wanted to play football, yeah, there was that one or two families that wouldn't let your kid play football. Now, everybody, professional football players, are not letting their kids play football. And yeah, in 15, 20 years, you know, between the ambiguity of what's a penalty, the ambiguity of how you're supposed to tackle, and the parents cracking down and not even letting these guys, you know what, you're not playing football. Learn how to play basketball. Learn how to play hockey. Learn how to play. That's going to hurt football. That's all this stuff, this combination of stuff is going to make football, it's going to hurt eventually. And it can't not, you know?
I agree. And that's why I think these studies – I agree with you 100%. I don't blame the NFL for CTE. I think these guys, at least nowadays, 20, 30 years ago, before all the CTE stuff was really in the news like it is now, I don't think players were aware. They should have been, but they weren't aware of the damage that they were doing to the brain.
You know, it's not good for you. You're doing some sort of damage.
But I don't know that they knew the damage that concussions do long term as far as suicidal tendencies and other behavioral problems that the studies are finding out now. So, but now that it's at the forefront, anyone that's getting into football now or that's currently in football, it's an assumed risk. They know what they're doing. There's no other occupation that they can pursue where they're going to get paid $3, $4, $10, $20 million a year to play a sport. So these guys are providing, you know, generational money for their families and their families' families. And they know what they're getting into, but these studies, I guess, are for the parents, like you said, out there who have kids and they want to know whether they should let their kids even get in and start this sport. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what develops as we learn more and more about this. But you're right. I think it's going to affect the game. And it seems like a league that's, you know, unpierceable, but you might be right. It might, there might be a lot of people coming up in the next generation that just aren't allowed to play because of all this stuff.
I could honestly say, man, this year was the first year, and I've told people this, was the first year that I was disenchanted by the NFL this year. You try to watch some games. I mean, thank God for the Red Zone Network, because they kind of keep it moving for you, and you can kind of, you know. Yeah. That guy does a great job, by the way. If I knew his name, I'd give him a plug. But the guy sits in the chat. I don't know where he goes to the bathroom. I don't know how he eats. He basically just sits there and narrates football for 9 hours and does a great job. But here's what I'm saying is I between the penalties, there's a flag on every freaking play. The kickoff's done, so that's a stoppage. The TV timeouts, that's a stoppage. Nobody even knows what is a pass interference call anymore. Nobody even knows leading with the head, you know, leading with the head tackle or run. Yep. It's become like they're in a phase now where it's almost like the steroid era with baseball, because it's like the stats you can't trust. I guess everybody's got to kind of roll with it, and it's just that's maybe what is great about sports too, is that it's not perfect and you have to kind of roll with some things. But right now we are in a football era where, yes, there's way too much stoppages. I mean, and everything. And honestly, this is going to sound insensitive. Enough with the causes too. Like, you know how many people watch football and watch sports? Everybody knows somebody who has gone through tragedy. Everybody's dealing with tragedy in one way or the other. You know, you watch these sports to freaking get away from this stuff, and now you got to have these pregame vigils. I'm not knocking it. I don't know, it sounds awful for me to say, but I'm just really being honest. I got to watch everything wearing pink when you know the freaking money isn't even going. A morsel of that money is going to where they say it's going. You know it's not happening. It's just the whole NFL – experience to me. I don't know. I don't want to not like the NFL. I just found myself just kind of like, screw this. I'm going out for a drink, or I'm going out somewhere, or I'm putting on a movie or something like that on my Sundays where I'm usually decompressing after a long week. You know, it's become disappointing for me.
Well now you can start watching baseball instead. And, cause now you have fist fights at second base and guys knocking each other out there. So it's more brutal than the NFL.
Have you ever seen anything like that where a guy just basically threw a right cross that landed flush?
I got to say, man, that was the coolest thing I've seen in sports in a long time. And, you know, we can get into the unwritten rules of baseball, but I have no problem with anything that happened there. Honestly, I mean, you have to suspend Odor. You can't have guys decking each other in baseball. It's not like hockey where it's institutionalized and they're wearing protective headgear, or you know, it's you just can't have fist fights. However, I have no problem with Bautista's flip of the bat last year in the playoffs. I have no problem, even though it was a little cowardly for them to wait till his last at bat, the last time they're going to play him this year, to plunk him. And no problem with that. And I have no problem with Bautista's slide, although it was late. And I have no problem with Odor punching him. You just have to suspend him.
You're just basically saying, you know what, that's stuff that's just going to happen within the game, and you got to just let it police itself.
Yeah. That being said, you know, I get the other side of the argument where you can't, you know, can you really have pitchers, you know, throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs, you know, at guys' heads? Yeah. You know, obviously they're intending to hit the guy in the back, but, you know, when you're throwing a ball 100 miles an hour, you don't know where it's going. You know, someone's going to get hit in the face one of these days as these guys are policing their own sport, and someone's going to get killed. So, you know, I don't know how you take that out of the game. It's one of those kind of cool, unsafe traditions that I don't want to see leave the game, but it almost has to.
Yeah, and a lot of times they'll throw at the head, but attempting to not hit him in the head, but just to back him off at at eye level. And then what if they miss 2 inches to the right on that or 2 inches to the left there? You're dealing with the same situation.
Yeah. And how do you really police that? You know, it's so subjective. It's like, all right, so rushback pitches are part of the game. So if that guy had just thrown high and tight on Bautista and not hit him, you know, is he trying to throw it at him and he just missed? Like, how do you really tell if one got away from, you know, sometimes you can tell, obviously, but sometimes you can't. So it's a tough thing to police. And but the way that whole thing started with the bat flip, I mean, the jerk-offs that have a problem with this guy in the biggest moment of his career in a playoff game, hitting a momentous home run and flipping his bat in the spur of the moment, it obviously wasn't rehearsed. He didn't know he was going to hit a home run. So to have a problem with that when every time a pitcher gets a big strikeout, he's pumping his fist and sprinting off the mound, showing up the batter. How is that any different?
No, I'll be honest with you. I'm one of the jerk-offs. I don't like it. I don't know. Again, we know already about me. I'm a freaking grumpy old man. I'm a traditionalist, and I like, you know, the fact that baseball has a little bit of level of class to it. You're not jumping around doing choreographed dances. You're not dabbing. You're not freaking doing all this stuff.
Oh, I don't like that.
I hated it. When, you know, what was it, the Zoltar, what was it, the, a few years back, you had the Brewers versus another team, I think the Diamondbacks, and it was basically like where, you know, it turned into WWF for a series where they were doing signs and they were doing, like, it was just weird. Baseball to me is a little bit better than that. No, I don't like the fist pumps from the pitcher. Every once in a while when it's appropriate, you know what, do it, and then you know what, you got me, but like, when it becomes like a, you know, an over-the-top thing that happens all the time, the bat flip, I think, is just a universal sign of disrespect when you really do it, you know, a little bit. And they call it, you know, I heard them, Pedroia and, you know, some of these guys, they kind of talk about it, and they actually call it pimping a home run. They actually have a name for it. The pimp, you know, he's going to pump his fist, and don't get mad at me when I pimp my home run. And they actually kind of just like use it as a term now, which is kind of funny.
I kind of like it.
Yeah. I like a little bit more of a traditional game to where people kind of, you know, you respect the opponent, and you know what, I don't know. There's not much left in that. There's not much left of that in sports and nowadays culture, and I like that it kind of does exist in baseball. But yeah, like the unwritten rules is just a great thing. I love the unwritten rules and the things that people do in baseball to try to keep the game moving and you're like for instance, like umpire gets hit in the shin. No matter what, you could be fighting with that umpire all day, balls and strikes. You know what? You're squeezing us. That's bullshit. What the hell's going on? They could be having a worse, you know, they could be going back and forth all day. Batter hits the umpire with a foul ball, the shoulder. Umpire, you know, is in a little bit of pain. It's an obvious thing that the catcher walks out and talks to the pitcher to give that umpire some time. It just happens like so fluidly. It's like clockwork. It's such a respect aspect to the game that it's just like you said, like an unwritten rule that always just kind of happens. And stuff like that I kind of get into because it's like old school stuff from back in the day, you know.
Or your boy Jeter tapping on the catcher's shin guards every time he comes up to the plate for the first time.
Exactly. Jeter freaking running. I mean, Jeter, his last year, he didn't run out ground balls. That was the only year he didn't run out ground balls because he wanted to be able to complete his victory tour. And I don't blame him for that. He deserved that. But every year up until that, you see guys haven't been in the league for 5 minutes. They don't even run to first base. Jeter sprinted to first base every single freaking time he was up there.
Bryce Harper didn't run out of ground ball last year, and Papelbon tried to choke him.
Yeah, because they probably had words before, and, you know, he's another one. Let me pimp my home run whenever I want. I mean, I don't know. It's baseball. I get it. You want to make stuff fun. And I guess there's really no way to kind of stop that freight train from moving forward through the years. But I'm being honest. I don't know. I'm hesitant to kind of moving into the modern day society. But I just liked the fact that, you know, they showed respect for each other. And you respect your opponent in baseball more than the other sports, I think.
I agree. I mean, I grew up playing baseball. So I agree. I like the respect. That's more my personality. I enjoy that. But then you have the other side that says the game needs more of the showmen, the Bryce Harpers, the guys that you want to hate because there's too much chumming it up nowadays. You know, you see players, they share agents now. They discuss playing together and changing teams for each other. They're chumming it up before the game. You have, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox are the biggest rivalry in sports, and now Ortiz is hanging out with the Yankees in the batting cage before the game. You have the first baseman chatting it up with the guy on first, like they're at a bar.
Yeah, I mean, that's also a product of nowadays too. And for and now they're allowed to pimp their home runs and fist pump and, you know, do flashy catches and make hand gestures when they hit a double or whatever and makes, I don't know, gang signs or whatever they're doing. you know, the fact that they're still allowed to do that, you're still talking about the same era where they are doing all those things that you just said. When it was more of a gentleman's game, they slid hard. They didn't make eye contact. They, you knew, yep, they were there. They would knock you down when you're supposed to get knocked down. But at the same time, they would, you know, be respectful of each other. And they would definitely, like, make sure that, you know, the integrity of the game was upheld, which, you know, was a simpler time. And, you know, and that transcends to other sports, too. I'm not a golf guy at all. But I heard that was the whole issue with golf nowadays. I heard, you know, even as recently back as, like, it's not necessarily a whole different era, but back in the Tiger Woods days with the Phil Mickelson and the Vijay Singh and whoever. Again, I'm pulling golf names out of my ass. I know nothing about golf. But, you know, I heard those guys stepped on the course to get your money, to come and assassinate you, basically, yeah, on the golf course. And, like, not being a golf guy, I respect that, though. You know what I mean? They go out there and they're trying to win and they're trying to do their thing. And now I hear these guys, everybody on the tour, it's almost like they're playing one big exhibition out there and they're all sharing the money and they're all partying and vacationing together. You're a golf guy. Is that true, or am I kind of, you know?
It's 100% true. So I'm a huge golf fan. I played baseball in high school and I played golf. I was a good golfer by good, you know, mid-70s. Not amazing, but a good golfer. And I follow golf on a regular basis. I watch weekend golf. I watch all the big tournaments. And, you know, back in Tiger's era, which it's funny to say Tiger's era that it's done, but it's kind of done. These guys wanted to kill each other. Tiger and Phil were not friends. You know, they did not talk on the course if they were playing together. There were no words exchanged as they're walking, you know, down the fairway toward the green. They didn't hang out off the course. But now, you know, 2 weeks ago, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, and two of their other buddies are in the Bahamas together vacationing. They all yuck it up on the tee boxes, walking down the fairways. They're complimenting each other's shot. And the funny thing is, I liked Tiger's era, right? I loved the killer personality in golf of all sports, kind of making it more of a real sport. But I actually enjoy this too. I enjoy now listen, they are all a lot more buddy. You know, Jordan Spieth is friendly with Rory McIlroy and they're friendly with Jason Day and Ricky Fowler, and they're all buddies off the course. They talk, they hang out, they drink beers together, they compliment each other's shots. But I kind of like that. It's a gentleman's game. I like them saying nice shot or nice putt and high five each other if someone holds out from a bunker. But then they definitely still want to kill each other and they still want to take each other's money. There's just more money to go around now because of what Tiger did for the game. Now everyone's making millions of dollars and it doesn't matter as much, you know, even though they all want to win. You know, when Jordan Spieth's making $100 million from Under Armour, he doesn't really have to win every week.
Oh, totally. Exactly. And you know what? It's just I don't know. Things are getting a little soft, but again, I gotta stop talking. I'm just sounding like an old freaking fart, and then, you know, it is what it is. But I don't know. Well, we've definitely covered a lot. How you been otherwise, buddy? Everything good?
I am good, man. I sit here in New York, and as the temperature dipped into the 50s tonight, as we're about to hit June, I sat here and
still
wondered.
50s over there?
Well, no, it's about to go up. Finally, it's going to feel like summer tomorrow, and it's going to hit 80 degrees tomorrow. But I sat here, and I'm wondering, knowing I was going to talk to you tonight, why the fuck am I still living in New York and didn't make the move down to Florida like you did?
Let me tell you something. I mean, I'm a New Yorker through and through. You're a Northeast guy, Philly. And I have to tell you, and I know this isn't going to work. I want to, like, Christopher Columbus this shit out here, because I moved down here for work, as you know, and, you know, most people who know me obviously know. You get down here. I've been trying to move down here for a little while though, and I'm telling you, man, I know what it's like to live in Queens, to have to know you have to walk to a subway station, sit on a subway train for 25 to 40 minutes, depending upon, you know, what signal is broken that freaking particular day. And, you know, you see people, you're walking through the, you know, you're walking through the concrete jungle. I know there's no place like it in the world because the energy it brings to the table. But, you know, the commute, the everybody's on top of each other. And, you know, at least you want to go to... You want to go to Home Depot or you want to go to Walmart or something. You got to plan that day a month in advance. Like, just to be able to come down here, the smell in the air is beautiful. Everything you touch is brand new. Every restaurant you'd ever want was within a block of you. You got a car. You have to drive. Yes, you have to get a car. But you get in your car. You go to work. You put on the radio. You have a nice commute, and the whole commute is full of Ferris wheels, fun parks, and palm trees, and
you don't have to drive a city bike through the streets and want to tear the head off of every delivery guy riding the wrong way down a one way bike lane.
I know, man. There's something to be said for it. I know. Bill Burr is one of my favorite comedians, and he said it too. He's like, I'm going to tell you something right now. Every man, woman, and child at some point in their lives deserves to be able to say, yes, I lived in, you know, the modern day Rome. I lived in New York City. And let me tell you something else. Every man, woman, and child at some point deserves to be able to also say, I got the fuck out of New York City. It's yeah. Like, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of New Yorkers down here. And, you know, being down here for just a couple of months now, and I'm just kind of doing interviews and meeting people and stuff like that. And we all just immediately, when we find out that we're both from New York, it's not like, oh, we're part, where, you know, what is it? No, it's us looking at each other like we share this secret that we're wondering why nobody else knows. Like, why do people still live there? I'm telling my family, my friends, anybody who will freaking listen. I'm telling you, it's a better life. It just is a better life. I'm sorry. I know, you know, for me anyway, you know, it's cheesy. Orlando, I equate to like the Times Square of the country. But in general, it's just, you know, I don't know what to tell you, man. You get in, the sun's always shining. The sunsets are always beautiful. There's hardly any traffic. And there's no wait for anything. And everything you go in is brand new. And the people are nice. You know what I mean? Everybody's nice. You have to deal with them, you know, and it's a stereotype. Every jerk off New Yorker that comes down here, oh, it's so slow. No, in Orlando, I'll tell you, it's a little slow. I'm not going to lie to you. You have to just adjust your patience level a little bit, and you're fine, man. You got to come down and visit, man. Come on.
Oh, I'm coming. You know, I'm coming down. I might not come back.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll see.
I got to, before we sign off, I didn't tell you I was going to do this. I'm going to, a couple quick little topics that I just want, like a quick answer, like a yes or no kind of thing, like a quick opinion. I'm going to throw out a couple things. You can, if you think of anything, you can fire them back at me. So, rumor McGregor Mayweather might happen. Who wins?
Oh, come on.
And why?
I can't. First of all, I can't see that happening. Corey P, you know, one of our DJ buddies, he always puts stuff on my Facebook wall about it's getting closer. Never is it from like an NBC Sports. Never is it from like the anybody, even like the New York Post, anybody that I've ever heard of. But I don't know. I mean,
Jalen Rose the other night on his NBA Jalen Jacoby show said he got a text message while on the air, says book it 100% happening next year, 2017, book your flights, happening in Vegas.
From it's who?
100% on.
Who sent that to him?
He wouldn't say. He wouldn't reveal his source.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's going to be a boxing fight, obviously, right?
Yep. I mean, if it was grappling, Mayweather would never sign up for that. He would get destroyed.
He might die. Yeah.
But in this, and if it's boxing, McGregor's going to get destroyed, like absolutely destroyed.
So McGregor's doing this for just a great, great challenge and money. You know what I mean?
100%.
What do you do? Do you get into the MMA at all or no?
Not really. Like I'll watch like the big fights, like if Ronda Rousey fights or Holly Holmes or McGregor. And, you know, I don't really watch it on a daily basis, but I am fascinated by it. Anytime I hear Dana White being interviewed, I can't not listen. I think he's a genius, and he's got a pretty good thing going.
I'm an old school boxing fan that really likes old, you know, the boxing. So since the boxing's dead, you know, I find myself getting a little bit more into it and a little bit more, I guess, knowledgeable about it with every big fight, because then it's just whatever bells and whistles that are around it. I also listen to Joe Rogan's podcast because, you know, I mean, talk about a dude who's a freaking, you know, like a Renaissance man. The guy freaking.
He went from Fear Factor to MMA.
Yeah, he's an actor. Well, he started out with, he was an actor on News Radio, that show, remember, with Phil Hartman?
Yeah.
So he's a freaking radio guy. He's a top 10 stand-up comedian working right now out there.
Yep.
He's, I mean, the guy's an impressive guy. You listen to him, you pick up a lot of MMA stuff too. So since boxing's freaking dead, which I did get into I'm still into boxing too. I pick it up when there's big fights too. The Canelo just knocked the shit out of Amir Khan. Interested to see if he's going to fight Triple G, who is an absolute beast. That's the fight everybody wants to see. But Canelo, you know Canelo, the redheaded Mexican guy?
I do.
Yeah, so they're saying he's probably going to fight Pacquiao. He'll never fight this Triple G guy because Pacquiao's probably an easier fight for him. And, you know, he'll make more money because Pacquiao's a bigger name.
Yeah,
but I guess getting back to the McGregor thing. Yeah, I mean, what? I guess anything can happen at this stage of their careers. I mean, yes, he would get his ass kicked in an MMA fight, Floyd would, and he would pick McGregor apart.
Yep.
In a boxing match.
Go ahead.
No, the only thing you'd have to watch out for is if he couldn't hurt McGregor. Let's just say McGregor has a ridiculous chin because he usually doesn't use boxing gloves.
Yeah.
And McGregor had no fear because Floyd could do whatever he wants and not hurt him. Then that gives him a little bit of an advantage in that regard. But I don't see how McGregor would be able to even touch Floyd.
I don't think he'll even hit him. Floyd's too fast. And the biggest joke is McGregor, I don't know if you saw the interview with him and Kenny Mayne this week. When Kenny Mayne was asking him if this is going to happen, and McGregor, you know, obviously said, you know, we're talking about it, but right now the money's not high enough for me. Talking about how Mayweather needs him more than McGregor needs Mayweather, which was the biggest joke I've ever heard. They're not even in the same stratosphere. Mayweather's worth $1 billion. McGregor's worth about $10 million. Mayweather doesn't need any money. He doesn't need any more fights. He's 49-0. McGregor's coming off a loss. So if anybody needs anybody, McGregor needs Floyd. So,
How about that? With all this hoopla about some super crushed genre fight against the guy who just got his ass kicked.
Yeah. But he has the balls to sit there and say, he's got to come to me. He needs me. I'm not fighting for $14 million. That would be a pay cut for me. Are you out of your fucking mind?
Yeah. And it's always like it's always funny to see these guys, like, you know, I'm going to say Ronda Rousey, Rex Ryan, you know, guys like and Conor McGregor. Like, I don't know. I think if you commit to just being a professional shit talker, if you commit to that,
yeah,
and then you get if you just freaking get your ass kicked, you gotta just keep talking.
Yeah,
you can't crawl into a hole. That's who you are. That's what made you great. You gotta keep going. You can't, like, Ronda Rousey basically just hid for 2 months, wouldn't even talk to anybody. Shut down completely. McGregor's also all of a sudden Mr. Humble, Mr. I'm going to go into the woods and train to fight this bigger man, and I'm going to come. No, bro, be who you are. You can't, you know, I mean, then what are you going to do? You're going to whip somebody's ass again, and now you're going to be the king shit talker again.
Exactly.
You get your ass kicked again, then you're going to go home. You're going to go back and forth. Be who you are. You know what? Say, you know what? Good for him. He kicked my ass. You know what? He's still a pussy, and I'm fucking him up the next time I see him. You know what I mean? You gotta wear it. You gotta, you know.
The only shit he talked after that fight was toward ESPN, saying he needs to stay in his hole and train, and he's not doing the press parade for some shitbox morning show in Connecticut. Obviously referencing exactly. ESPN.
What's the reason for ESPN catching shrapnel? For what reason? I have no idea. They can only help him. I don't know.
Yeah.
We're coming up on an hour here, buddy. Believe it or not, time flies.
Flew by. I think we've covered a lot of stuff. That, you know, I appreciate all who are tuning in for our pilot podcast. stay with us. You know, we'll,
If you made it this far into the broadcast, understand that this is our absolute first time doing this whatsoever. We will kind of, you know, I guess modify it and stuff. We also don't want to make it predominantly about sports. We definitely want to kind of mix in some funny stuff, some anecdotes, give a little humor. You know, we are, you know, a couple of witty guys. I think we could pull off the funny side of it too, I think, a little bit. But, you know, to come soon, there will be the Facebook page. There will be the, you know, the avenue where we can make it interactive, where we want to hear some of the stuff. Where you're going to tell us we just basically, you know, embarrassed ourselves and said something ridiculous, and we want the back and forth going.
Absolutely.
And going forward, I think we're going to have a pretty good run here. It's going to be a good time, if maybe, nothing else.
Maybe we'll let the fans of our podcast name it for us, since we haven't figured out a name for it yet.
Yeah, we don't even know what the hell we're calling this thing, but at this point, it doesn't matter. You know, we're just getting it going. We'll have some fun catching up with my old buddy Stu, and great hanging out, buddy.
Great hanging out. I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.